I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Nate Langston, and this text message was sent on Sunday, the 8th of March, 2015. Joining me this week to discuss the top UK technology news and Mobile World Congress is Ian Morris. And later on the show, we are going to be embarking on a veritable cruise through the choppy waters of this year's Mobile World Congress, MWC as it is so commonly known. And at the helm this year over in Barcelona was Ian Morris, who will recount the discoveries he made during 2015's sailing. Which of the many islands discovered were the most fruitful in terms of new technology launches? And perhaps most interesting, which companies sunk after hitting an iceberg of Morrisian criticism? You're welcome, everyone, for that word. But first, a few choice items from this week's news. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
How are you back in Barcelona and happy to be so?
I'm home. You know what? I've never been to Barcelona before. I've never been to Mobile World Congress. So this was... Oh, no, I have been to Barcelona, but I've never been to Mobile World Congress. This was a first. And you know what? It's a better show than I was expecting. It's
better now they moved venues. It used to be at a different venue that was about as much fun as having your bowels extracted by a machine.
It was
just a tedious chore to get round. But last year they moved it to a new place and I enjoyed that much more, although I didn't go out this year because I didn't have time.
Yeah, it's good. And what's good about it is also that you can see the halls from a glass walkway, which means that you don't have to go in the boring halls.
Yes, this
is
very
good.
True. And you can also get past the crowds of people having meetings in the middle of a gangway by just walking above them like some sort of god.
Yes, it's good, isn't it?
It is. Well, we're going to come back to Mobile World Congress in a few minutes' time to hear about Ian's reveals, his top reveals, highlights, the lowlights, some surprises, and also what we didn't see at Mobile World Congress that we think we may see at IFA, which generally takes place later in the summer in Berlin. But let's start by talking about the story from, this was from V3, which had written that the UK will have a dedicated Internet of Things network to support public sector services by 2030, and that's according to an Arm Emerging Technologies director. And he was speaking at a conference that V3 was at, and the chap in question is Gary Atkinson. And he reckons that there will be two communication networks in place across the UK within that 15-year period. One will be for high-speed data for phones and mobile broadband and that sort of thing, which obviously we've already got. But the other one will be what he called a parallel network that will be low-powered and would power things like, it would monitor bridges, it would monitor for flooding, air quality, and everything would talk to each other to help people who are monitoring weather or even, I suppose, natural disasters. This could all be monitored in real time. 2030 seems like quite a time away for something like this, do you think, Ian?
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly long way away, and given that the technology is already there and it's all possible already, I don't know what we're waiting for, but I like the idea of it, actually. It seems like a pretty smart way of doing it. What I don't quite understand is who's going to get access to the information, because obviously that's key. If everyone has access to the information, that could be amazing, couldn't it? You know, you get up in the morning and your computer could tell you your route to work in infinite detail about, you know, weather, traffic, all of that kind of jazz, and it would be quite cool.
I agree. I think it would. I wouldn't be surprised if it was funded or at least under... supported by government, and certain data was made available to public utility services and others were made available to the public. For example, the weather would be one, but I don't think that the public necessarily needs direct access to information about earthquakes. Not that we have them in this country particularly.
No, but I don't often see why I can't see that information.
Well, this is true, but I think in terms of the people who are going to support this are the people who may be able to make money off it, either as a private investment, such as better GPS, systems that I don't know, they could pump cleaner air into your room based on knowledge of what is toxic in the air around you. I don't know how toxic the air is around where you are in, but it's... in where I live in Ealing Broadway, it's
toxic.
It's toxic. It's Britney Spears out
don't
there.
Don't worry, you'll just transform into a superhero. There's nothing to worry about.
But it's going to have to be funded quite widely, because if they're talking about putting sensors on top of lampposts, that is a very heavy investment from an infrastructure perspective. It's going to have to be paid for from multiple fronts. And I suspect that the public will foot some of that bill.
Yeah, but you know, sensors can be in anything. Like that, we could find that mobile phones are monitoring air quality. I mean, look, the Samsung Galaxy, which is it, the Note 4 and the S? No, just the Note 4 actually has a UV sensor, which can tell you about how bad the UV light is on any given day. So you can see whether or not how much sun cream you need, that kind of stuff. So you know, you could take data from all of that stuff and feed it into this big, you know, big network of things.
And you know what? That's an incredibly, incredibly interesting point. You're absolutely right. That could help massively with sun protection in general, because so many people go out and I think some people blindly put on sun cream, not knowing how much UV is in
Do you need 20 for the day? You know how long you're going to be out. Do you need 20 or 50? I mean, not that it really matters, but I generally put 50 on. But people trying to seek some sort of a tan might feel differently.
That's the thing. It's usually to do with tan that's the first thought, and not necessarily skin damage, which is, you know, as we know, an unfortunate and common side effect from people sunbathing and falling asleep in the sun.
Don't forget as well that there was TomTom uses data from Vodafone, doesn't it, to understand traffic and send that information to your sat nav. So again, you know, that's all just sensors, really, isn't it? Ultimately, and that's something that's happening. So I think we'll see a lot of really exciting stuff happening with sensors and the Internet of Things in the next 2 years. They've all been talking about it endlessly, so it better happen.
It's bizarre, though, to think, though, we are talking about 2030 here, and we are in 2015 now. And if you think, just in case you've forgotten, in the year 2000, just think about the speed of the internet, the capabilities of our mobile phones. Had anyone talked about Internet of Things? Had anyone squozen 200 gigabytes of storage space onto a micro SD card? No, but
that's
they did.
Nothing. They're talking about going up to terabytes in the near future, aren't they, for micro SD? I mean, the storage is the most remarkable advance I think I've seen in many ways.
It's more to do with the fact that what we think of as, you know, it'll be like sensors on lampposts and our phones can do this. You know, whether you factor in something like Moore's Law or just the fact that things every year or so get half the size and half the cost, in 15 years' time, we probably won't even have lampposts. You know, there won't be a post. It'll be such an outmoded concept to have to put up a thing that costs hundreds of pounds to light a very specific
hundreds,
part of the road.
God, I think they'd be thrilled if they could do it for hundreds. It's probably thousands per post.
I mean per post. Yeah. I can't imagine a lamppost costs thousands of pounds.
Oh, well, you, my friend, have not encountered government bureaucracy.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that on a future note. But let us know. We've got our podcast email, podcast@natelangson.com. If, you know, what would you like to be monitored by a lamppost? Let us know. Second news story got today is from the BBC, which had reported, amongst other places, that European regulators have dropped plans to ban roaming charges. Now, this is an incredibly bad step for anybody who uses a mobile phone across Europe, because at the moment, you can be charged quite a hefty sum per megabyte, you know, tens of pence per megabyte. And, you know, when you talk about an email potentially being a megabyte, or you think that one song on Spotify might be about 5 megabytes, this is a very seriously expensive business to still be doing. And we know for a fact that this is not because the technology costs a lot of money for a song to go over a mobile network. It's simply to do with what the networks internationally charges locally, and that expense is passed on to consumers. This is what the European regulators had said was going to end this year. No more roaming charges across the EU. At the moment, it's still just capped. So there is a maximum that you can be charged for calls, texts and data. But it's still prohibitively expensive and still results in what common talk shows like to call as bill shock, which can be generally seen from sad-looking people holding up mobile phone bills printed on paper in front of a tabloid photographer. You can usually tell when someone's got bill shock.
Yeah, well, they've got a paper bill. I mean, that is the first step, isn't it, towards not understanding technology.
Yeah, but this is depressing news, isn't it?
It is depressing.
I mean, this
news
is the kind of stuff to stay in bed for and cry for several days.
Well, you know, look, things never work out in the best interest of the general public, do they? There's a corporation here, and they're trying to make money. When I was in Barcelona, I was spending £5 a day for data on Three, which is extortionate, really. I mean, I get that. Well, no, I don't get any of it. I mean, Three is just about to do Feels at Home in Spain, or Feel at Home, whatever it's called, which is great because it means that I'll be able to just not pay anything. But this time, no dice, I'm afraid. And Three is a good network for that. But everyone else, it's bad. It is bad. And we were promised that we would get no roaming fees. And I think it's only fair. We do know that the data transit costs zero, or as close to zero as makes no odds. I think there was some discussion once about exactly how much it costs. But of course, it's all offset. You know, for every Brit that goes to America, there's presumably an American that comes to Britain, or you know, something like that anyway. So
yes,
we just
in those countries now, in those countries, that's true. But those are two countries that have extremely well-developed and well-populated mobile network infrastructures. However, there are parts of Europe that are less developed, and they simply can't necessarily afford for tourists to come along and use up their data, because it would crush the capacity for their local users. So
yeah, I mean,
they are pricing it prohibitively expensive, kind of like congestion charge or you know, peak rail fares, as partly as a deterrent to try and use less data or use off-peak times and things like that.
I don't really mind if they do that. I don't object to that. The point is, I think that most of us sort of understand that when we go to a country that, you know, for the most part, the network you're roaming on is probably owned by or a part of the group of companies that you subscribe to.
Yes, very true in the case of Orange.
Vodafone, particularly.
Telefonica.
Vodafone is a huge European player, as is, yeah, Telefonica particularly.
But a lot of these have their own P&L, their bottom line, and so they still have to locally make money. And sometimes, as daft as it is, that means making money off an international partner.
I mean, yes, but
to put something into an interesting little... Sorry, carry on.
Well, no, I was just going to say that the charges levied against the British people are by their operator. I think if you could see the prices that the operators abroad were charging your operator, you would be surprised by how little that was. That's the point.
Yes.
The rip-off is happening in the UK. It's not necessarily happening in the country you're roaming in.
Well, we know now that it may be as late as 2018 that we get some sort of massive drop in pricing. I've read somewhere, I'm struggling to find the source that I found for that number now, but we're not going to get a ban on roaming charges in
Europe
this year or next, by the sounds of it, which is just, it's just so depressing, because there's money there just waiting to be poured into these networks.
Also, I don't know if you feel the same way about it as I do, but as a rule, I mean, I did it by data in Barcelona because I needed to work, and I needed to be able to check my email very easily. What I normally do, if I was, before I had Three and I could go to America and not be charged, I would just not buy data, and I wouldn't make phone calls or really that many text messages. So what they were making from me was nothing, and what they could have been making was something.
Yes,
I would pay a charge. Three, weirdly, has gone completely the other way and just demolished all of them. But if you had to pay an extra £5 a month for that service, I would pay it.
I completely agree. And one of the only good things about being on three is that whenever I go to America, Bloomberg's office is in New York, and going over there is potentially quite expensive to have a mobile phone that's not paid for by your company. But I get unlimited data. Yeah. On my phone when
I'm there. It's not unlimited.
I think it actually is. It's something like that you can't use over like 80 gig something like that.
It's 27 gigs, but for the purposes of roaming, you are talking about unlimited data, aren't you?
Yes.
I just wanted to make the point that we both agree, don't we, that the word unlimited is much misused.
It's a stupid word, and I don't think there is a need for unlimited data.
No.
I just think there is a need for more competitively priced packages. And I, like you, pay for a mobile phone. I actually pay for two, because I pay for one for my iPad on EE, and I pay for another one on three. And I would be happy to pay extra for international usage of the data I'm already paying for, because I appreciate that there is a need to fund that, and that is not a problem for me. And I don't need it to be extortionate. I just need it to be fair. And at the moment, it feels unfair. And even though I could afford to pay what they're charging me now, I refuse to on principle, because I think that it is just, it's disproportionately large for the benefit I get, and I can just wait till I'm on Wi-Fi, and I think that's a shame. We've talked about this, I think, for enough, but again, let us know any opinions you have about roaming, and do you suffer from the wrath that is the European roaming wraith? podcast@natelangson.com. Last little bit of news. It's not so much news as it is what's something that we're saying now is news that tomorrow won't be.
It hasn't been news for a really long time.
Fact. We just wanted to point out that Apple is having an event tomorrow, Monday, as we are recording this, and I shall be out at its event. This is something we believe to be centered almost solely on the Apple Watch. I have actually used an Apple Watch before, but only in a demo mode when I was in Cupertino last year. And this time, we're expecting it's going to be the opportunity to try it on, pardon me, get it fitted, and actually use some of the apps that have been in development in Apple's secret labs. And I read a great report the other day, which I'm now realizing actually might even have been on Bloomberg. I didn't mean to compliment my own company, but I think I've done so accidentally, which talked about how Apple had this lab that developers had to they could bring a hard drive into with their source code, but they weren't allowed phones or pens or paper, and they had to develop inside the lab for the watch, and then they weren't allowed to take their hard drive away with them afterwards. So there was just zero possibility that any of this data could be leaked outside of Apple. And we are hopefully going to see the results of some of that secrecy and development work on Monday by seeing some of the first apps that have been developed for the watch, as well as found out pricing, exact release dates, from what I've heard, possibly a MacBook Air with a Retina display and no fan. That's very exciting. Ian, what's your 30-second takeaway on what we're expecting?
I can't wait for a new Air. That's very exciting, although I've never owned an Air in my life, but I do think it's a great little machine. Very exciting about that. The watch, I really just can't wait to find out whether it's any good, or whether the rumours of its 3-hour battery life and, you know, are true or exaggerated. But I don't know. I think it's going to be a massively important device. If Apple can't get watches right, then I think probably we should all just stop making smartwatches.
Well, by the time most people listen to this, it's highly likely that there will be, in your podcasting catching software, a text message special, the first that we have done, which will be published, all being well, on Monday evening. And this will be from the Apple event itself, including some guests, including an interview with people in the style and fashion industry who are also knowledgeable about technology, commenting on what they think about the watch in terms of being a fashion and luxury object. That's going to be out Monday evening, as I say, all being well, so we're not going to dwell on it too much right now, but do watch out for that in your feeds. Or delete it immediately if you despise Apple, as so many people, for some reason, love to do. Isn't that right, Ian?
You can't lump me in with that.
All right, mate.
No, I have very mixed feelings about Apple. I dislike some aspects of it and rather like others.
Well, that's a fair approach. Well, I've never heard one.
About as democratic as I can be bothered to be. But times change. I find that the Apple, on average, the Apple fanboy is a lot less rabid now than the Google or Android fanboy.
Well, times change could indeed have been the tagline for Apple's launch, and may indeed be the tagline for the text message Apple Watch special coming out.
Absolutely. Let's call it that. That's a brilliant idea. The times, text message special, times change.
There we go. Something along those lines. Well, that's going to do it for news, but we want to talk about Mobile World Congress 2015. Ian went out to Barcelona.
I did.
He cruised the floors. He touched. He felt. He caressed. And then when he was done, he went over to the trade show. And we've got some interesting releases and reveals, haven't we, mate?
We do. I mean, I think people will probably be pretty aware of what happened for the most
part. Yeah, well, why don't we just get the top reveals out of the way first? Because they're pretty obvious, and we talked about them on last week's show. Yes. The S6, that's a big one. What's your opinion on that?
I think it's the change that they needed to make to that phone, honestly, because it needs some hype about it. And the last one was just, it was okay. You know, they haven't really made a bad flagship phone ever in the time I can remember, really. I mean, they've all been pretty serviceable.
But sales of the S5 dropped quite dramatically last year.
And I've had conversations with Samsung about this. And, you know, I've mentioned Andy Griffiths before, and he's a really interesting person to speak to. He's the UK president. And he said people are definitely moving towards things like Notes because they want a slightly different phone. They're bored of that one particular form factor, and that they needed something to move to. And Apple pretty much proved that to be the case, didn't they? By completely reinventing the iPhone. I think understanding the fact that if they didn't, then they would see sales stagnate as well. And the reverse has happened. They've sold a lot of iPhones this year.
Yeah, and I noticed there was one analyst's report that came out the other evening that said that Apple is now the number one smartphone maker in the world, only just above Samsung. And last time, Samsung was only just above Apple, but it is extremely close, extremely close. But the S6 in person, it sounds like it's a yay.
It is very nice. The Edge is the one to go for, obviously, because it's just dramatically different and feels nice. And obviously, there are a lot of issues to overcome. They've moved to their own processor, so there's questions about whether that's going to perform. There's battery life.
Well, actually, we covered that in last week's show because I did some digging into benchmarks.
I have seen that, the benchmark thing, yeah.
And it does seem that it is a more efficient chip inside.
It's definitely possible. I will wait until I have one in my hand to make the final call on that. But the benchmarking, yeah. I mean, I don't really like benchmarking as a rule.
But in the worldwide willy waving competitions, that is at least one way to objectively say whether one phone is a better performer than the other.
Yeah, but look, they have their place. I just don't think you should buy a phone based on its benchmark results. But I think everyone knows that, right?
For anyone listening to this show that didn't hear episode 7 last week, I went into some detail about the processor and the speed and versus the HTC equivalents and
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
An LG, so do go back and download that if you want to hear someone nerd out for 10 minutes on CPU architecture. The other thing that was interesting on the Samsung side, I think, is that it revealed Samsung Pay, the innovatively named competitor to Apple Pay. And I have to say, regardless of how good we think Samsung Pay is, which it is a good move for them to have something like this, a contactless payment method, pretty bored of the naming of these products. Samsung Pay, Apple Pay, the 5S, the 6, the S5. Like, we just need some Someone just needs to take some drugs and name a product.
That's how Steve Jobs used to do it. There's a real problem, isn't there, actually. With like, yeah. Well, yeah, you know, the whole of Apple is built on his LSD taking.
True.
There is a problem. There is a lack of imagination. I mean, you know, why couldn't they call it, you know, cashish or something? I don't know why, what I'm suggesting here, but it is boring. Like, and also it's egotistical, like Apple Pay, Samsung Pay. Like these products are not about you guys, you know.
Well, you know why, but they had to call it that, because otherwise, if they'd have used their traditional wording, they'd have called it S Pay, which everyone would just pronounce Spay.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it has connotations of being, you know, having your genitals removed.
Absolutely, S Pay would be a disaster. But they have pretty much got rid of a lot of their horribly named stuff now. Actually,
yeah. Spen Shelf.
Spen, I think stays. We won't know until a little bit later this year.
All right, well, let's move on away from Samsung. Let's talk about what you thought were the highlights. I'm going to pick out the first one you've noted here, the LG Urbane.
Yeah.
Or Urbani, as I've heard it pronounced once.
Oh, really? I'd love to know by whom. But
I think it was ironically. Yeah. I hope it was ironically on a podcast last week.
Yeah, okay.
But this is a smartwatch from LG.
Yeah. It's perhaps not the Urbane alone that's interesting. They have an LTE version as well. It's notionally powered by WebOS as well, which is the old Palm operating system that powers LG's TVs and is rather good, actually.
Bit ironic, isn't it? Being designed by Palm and worn on a wrist.
You've
worn this quite extensively out.
I consider myself to be somewhat of a connoisseur of LG's round watches, because I think that the G Watch R is one of the finest watches that's been made of this, you know, smartphone era. Obviously there are better watches in the world, but at least they've sort of pretty much nailed what makes a bearable timepiece and sort of focused on that. LG's real skill, I think I have to say, is AMOLED displays, because that's where they seem to be really cutting ahead of everyone else. No one can really get AMOLED quite right. I mean, phone screens are different, watch screens, obviously, all that kind of stuff. But I've got one of their TVs here at the moment. It's breathtaking. But in terms of phones, the LTE version is powered by WebOS, which means it's not Android Wear. It means it's you have to have a separate app to run it, but it has its own phone number. You can make calls from it. You can text from it. It has a tiny little keyboard. It's kind of ridiculous, but it's sort of serviceable. The idea of this is it was really built, I think, by LG for a specific operator in Korea, which means it's highly unlikely, I'd say, it will make it outside of Korea. It may arrive in the UK, and I may be very surprised, but I do not know if we have the appetite to pay a subscription fee to own a watch. And it also has basically no app ecosystem, because it's all got to be done by LG. They're not looking for external developers or anything. So the apps you get on it are relevant to some people and not relevant to others. They have a golf app, for example, to talk you through your golf something or other, I don't know, and a hiking
I don't understand this. So this is a watch with 4G that has a SIM card in it, that has an on-screen keyboard. You don't need to use it with a phone.
No, but you can, but you don't need to.
Constant
heart rate monitoring as well, which is interesting.
You'd need it to work out why you're so stressed with this new device.
Well,
why? I don't understand this. You know, LG did this. I don't know if you remember this. About 2007, 2008, I think we were at CNET, actually, at the time
it
came out.
They released an
LG watch on Orange in the UK, and I think it cost £1,000, and it had a contract. And you can imagine how well that did, given how many of them are still being used now and how many competitors they inspired. It does seem to me like they must have thought the time's right for this again, because I doubt for something like a smartwatch, they would have forgotten the bad thing that they did several years previously.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to someone and they said to me, it's really basically, they've built this specifically for somebody, haven't they? It's not actually a product that's ever really designed to be mass market. It's an operator has seen a niche and wants to exploit it for some reason, and they've gone to LG, and LG has done it. But I don't think it will have a massive appeal to anyone else, because it's going to be probably quite expensive as well. I mean, I don't think we have pricing yet, but let's be honest, the Urbane is £300 on its own. The LTE is going to add a significant amount of money to that.
Well, I think if anything, that's fair enough. I mean, if they're not aiming it to be pushing it out there as the next big thing, then it's unfair of us to say, oh, this is a stupid idea. It's terrible. Because, you know, there are lots of things that exist in the world that are for a very specific niche market. And it's not a bad thing. They don't sell in the multiples of millions because they're designed for a small audience. And that's fair enough. But certainly, I would be surprised, as you say, if this came out here. But good news that the LG Urbane is doing well. Maybe LG is one to watch for all future non-Apple and non-Samsung smartwatches.
There's an interesting tidbit, because Samsung's not announced any smartwatches at Mobile World Congress, although I thought it would. And unless it does at IFA, I think that they're having a very real think about smartwatches and their place in society.
Well, that's interesting. Well, we're going to come to IFA, actually, the end of this segment. I wanted to ask about a low light. And when I asked you earlier to pick a low light, a product that you saw out at Barcelona, you came back with one that actually surprised me, although I can understand your reasoning potentially, the HTC One M9.
The M9.
M9.
Spectacularly underwhelming. I've been a bit of a critic of HTC because I think that they spectacularly go off-piste in ways that I really don't understand. They did the HTC Re last year, which was what was described by one reviewer, not me, I hasten to add, they won't send me one for review, silly bears, as basically a smartphone camera built into a weird case. And the quality of it was, by all accounts, pretty horrible. They also released that.
I can confirm that because I went to the launch and I tested it and it was awful.
Yeah, I think that seems to have been the feedback I've had from it. It's awful. I get the idea of it. I think it's maybe the sort of thing you'd expect to come out of Sony, because Sony has an imaging company and it's a very good imaging company. It makes very good sensors, and they have the expertise to leverage them as well in terms of software. That product would have made sense from Sony. HTC is a phone company. It only really makes phones, and then it comes out with a Re, and of course it's cack. And then of course now they've come out with the VR, but we'll come to that.
Well, actually,
explain why the M9 is so spectacularly uninspiring. It's not that it's necessarily bad. It is the same case as the M8. It's the same screen, pretty much. In fact, I think it's exactly the same screen. It has an uprated processor. It's now using the Snapdragon 810, which is great. Very good processor. Very, very quick. And I think they may have tweaked a few other bits and pieces as well. Ultimately, when you read a press release from a company and they go through the highlights of what is special about this phone, and a lot of those are things like slightly better camera software, slightly better way of finding contacts and stuff like that. When that's all they can really do, it's just that I'm not interested. And of course, it was a parade for their new version of Sense, which is their UI overlay. And I don't care. I do everything I can to get away from Sense when I've used an HTC phone, because I just think it's diabolical.
Does it still have the two cameras on the back?
No, they've got rid of that. The biggest admission of not knowing what the hell they're doing in the history of mankind. They've taken off the two cameras from the back, now it only has one, and it's a 13 megapixel camera, I believe. No, that's not true. I think it's a 20 megapixel.
I'm not surprised that the two camera thing disappeared, because it was not a good feature. It didn't work. At best, it could create a analog version of what you can create digitally in Instagram. It was about as impressive,
but
and
also
it's not worth the hype.
What you have to remember is that as soon as they did that, Google then announced that camera app, which enabled you to do pretty much the same thing by just slightly moving the camera. So, and that was possible. And what HTC, I believe, said this year, I was speaking to all sorts of people at the Mobile World Congress, and I believe that their thing was, oh yeah, you can do all of that in software. And I'm like, yeah, but you could do it all in software last year, and you still minced around with this silly, ridiculous camera, double camera thing that really took them nowhere. So they've backtracked on that. They've got rid of it. There's a new version of the software. The phone is largely the same with a slight upgrade. Blah, 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 blah. Apparently it sells okay, that phone. So
yeah, and it got good reviews when it last came out. And I suppose possibly what's at play here is, and if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Well, you know what? Look, here's the thing. The HTC One is a phone that I'd happily recommend to other people, but I would never choose to own one myself. I think that's an interesting angle to come at. I can see why people like them. It's just not for me.
Well, possibly for you then is the surprises that we've got. We've got two surprises down here that we've listed to talk about.
One of which I blew a minute ago.
Yes, you did. So let's come to that first. The Valve virtual reality headset.
Yes.
This is a surprise more so because HTC is making it than the Valve is behind it.
Yeah, I don't understand this. To explain why I don't understand it...
Do you want to explain what it is first?
Well, it's a VR headset, which is pretty much the same as Oculus Rift. As far as I can tell, it's a sort of parallel system that does largely the same thing and will compete with Oculus when it launches. Now, Samsung did the Gear VR, which features Oculus technology. Has its own sensors built in as well to speed things up, so you're not using phone sensors. But it used your note screen, and there's a version coming for the S6 as well. And the advantage of that, of course, is that you've already got the note, so it's cheap. It's not cheap, because by the time you've done it, you've spent a grand. But we don't know how much Oculus is going to cost. But Oculus is very, very good, but very tethered to a PC. So it doesn't suit every audience. That's where the Samsung thing was kind of clever, because it gives mobile gaming VR, and I played some games that I really enjoyed. It was surprisingly engrossing, actually. And so I could see the point in that in the market. I know it's never going to sell huge numbers, but I think it was interesting. I think it was a good attempt at something, and I think Samsung's rumoured to be putting some more weight behind it this year. Oculus, we all know it's going to be huge. Maybe not huge, but it's an enormously important market.
Well, it's got Facebook behind it. So
it does have Facebook.
And they've put $3 billion into acquiring that company before it's even released a product.
Probably. Yeah, but let's be honest, they spent more on WhatsApp. They spent $22 billion on WhatsApp, didn't they? So really, Oculus was chump change.
True.
So now Valve is involved with this HTC thing. Now, I don't firstly understand why HTC is building it, but actually HTC has great industrial design. It's one of their strengths. They're able to put together things that really are very nicely made. They sometimes have problems with software and stuff like that, but there's nothing majorly wrong with how they do things. I can see the logic of that. But what I don't understand is why it's not about mobiles. It's another thing that you plug into a computer, or you know, maybe other things. Probably it's going to be about Steam machines, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that Valve is putting a lot of time and effort into.
But even the Steam machines, I mean, what is taking so long? It's something that was announced, 2 years ago at CES.
And yeah, but they're the incumbent, and they're competing against Sony PlayStation, Xbox, and Windows.
Yeah, but but they're not competing against Windows, really, because, let's be honest, there still aren't that many Linux games for... I'm sure that's a lot of what's going on. There's probably a lot of work being done in the background to make sure there is a catalogue. But Steam machines, they should have really just spoken to Microsoft about, you know, a cheap version of Windows 8 or something. There's lots of different ways. But anyway, off topic massively. But anyway, so Valve VR, I don't know. I love Valve. We all do, don't we, right? PC gamers just adore that company. It's impossible not to like it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, I mean, it's just great. Everything they do is pretty much great. And, it's the one piece of software that you game with that doesn't annoy the living daylights out of you.
Well,
Play. Sorry.
Well, we're going to do a VR special at some point in the future, and maybe next month, about the state of the VR market. Something Ian suggested before we started recording, which I think would make a great idea. So we will have to return to that. Before we get to the end of the show, there's just a couple of other things we wanted to mention. There was a big surprise in that BlackBerry was at Mobile World Congress and revealed I like CNET's, CNET's approach, written by our friend and, in fact, ex-colleague Rich Trenholm, who wrote that mysterious BlackBerry slider combines the old and new of smartphone design. And I couldn't put it any better myself. It is A BlackBerry phone with a BlackBerry keyboard, but with a giant, like, 5-inch touchscreen phone on top of it, and the keyboard slides out from behind. And when the keyboard has been slid out, the device looks about the size of something you could beat a whale to death with. It looks very, very large.
You wanted LSD-inspired design. There you have it. I don't get that company. I mean, I really don't.
Yeah, it's a really bizarre one. And they've, you know, they were showing off a different phone at the time, the Leap. And this phone was revealed something as a tease. And I kind of think that the reason they've done this is actually to gauge public reaction. Like, I think that this was their way of not just coming out with a product that absolutely nobody wants, and actually thought, you know what, we'll have all eyes on us at the moment because everyone knows that we're kind of struggling. They are very much the underdog at the moment. Let's just put this mad thing on stage and say, here's a thing that we're working on, and just wait and see what the feedback is. See if people like the idea of it. See if it's got enough to keep the BlackBerry faithful, or if those people are ready to jump ship and said, we've had enough, we're moving to Samsung.
Yeah, I mean, Samsung's done some really good stuff with security, actually.
They've done good things with security. Their Knox platform is, from what I understand from security experts, pretty well regarded. It's good enough for the government. And Samsung makes some extremely good and extremely successful phones. So they've got a very strong competitive pull for people who are still using BlackBerry, all three or four of them. So we'll have to keep our eye on this because it's the crappiest thing to ever say, but there's not much else we can say at the moment. But I do think that this was something of a tease to encourage some feedback. Ian, last thing before we end the show, IFA is a few months away, and there was one thing that didn't come out at Mobile World Congress that you thought may have been shown. Do you want to?
Well, the traditional pattern is that Samsung keeps the Note for IFA as a rule. So we'll see. It's difficult to tell. IFA is a very strange show. There's usually something. Sony will announce, I think it's Z4 for IFA. So I think, you know, it'll be Note 4, Z4. Then obviously Apple comes around a little bit after that, doesn't it? I mean, literally the week after, and then announces, a new iPhone. I mean, they're going to be one to... It's going to be fascinating to see what Apple does this year.
No, it will and it won't. I actually think that this year, everything is about the watch. I think this is going to be... If you remove the watch out of Apple's launch cycle, this is going to be a very benign year,
humdrum,
but kind of... Yeah, just a very traditional, just iterative year for Apple. I think that had the watch not been on the cards, I could see the iPhone 6 design being taken to the iPad, because the iPad mini has never had a redesign. It's always been that design, whether it's got Retina display, whether it's got slightly fatter or thinner, it's never changed its form factor, unlike the iPad Air. And I could see Apple unifying its design to be consistent across iPad and iPhone. But I honestly don't even know if I would expect that this year, because from what I understand, everybody at Apple right now is basically working on the watch.
Interesting.
And on something to do with the watch. And if you're not working on something to do with the watch, then you're probably sitting around canteens twiddling your thumbs, because all Apple cares about at the moment is the Apple Watch.
That's interesting.
From what I've heard. So I don't think that there's going to be a great deal of exciting releases apart from that. I think we will see a few updates at WWDC, but that's going to be about iOS 9. And again, from what we know about that, it's going to be more about refining what's there, not introducing new stuff. And then further down the line, it's going to be about revisions to existing products and not whole new ones.
With a possible Apple TV exception. Update, right?
Even Apple TV, I wouldn't expect to see anything exciting there. I really would.
Come
nothing.
On, they've got to do something with that product.
Mate, nothing great. It does what it does. And I just don't expect to see anything big there. A change, maybe a UI overhaul, possibly integration with existing products. But in terms of a complete redesign or rethink, I just don't think they are currently even paying that any great attention.
Here's a question for you.
Go on.
HomeKit. Now, that's a product that's gone very, very quiet.
Well, that's because HomeKit's not so much a product as it is It's more like Wi-Fi or, you know.
But also you need it's one of Apple's chipped things, isn't it? You need an Apple chip for it to work. And that's going to mean that everyone sort of would hope, I think, that you would have a smart light bulb and it would work with HomeKit. That would be what would make HomeKit great, but that's not what they've done. We'll do another special on home automation if you want.
Yeah, we probably should do. I mean, the Apple certification process is pretty laborious and extremely expensive because if you want to, it's a sort of tangential background here, but if you want to be made for iPod or, you know, whatever it is, made for iPad, you have to send products to Hong Kong, which is where they do the certification process. And you also have to provide Apple with a number of them in store. So they've always got an amount of stock, all of which Apple can return to you without you making any money. And if they demo it or have a return in the store, you don't get the money back for that.
Wow.
You'll have to repackage it and send it back for sale again.
That's crazy.
So it's a very expensive process to get into the Apple store because, like Apple does, it controls everything and it generally benefits the customer, not the manufacturer, unless you're talking about profits, in which case, other way around. Anyway, we have gone on for quite a long time. Do check out the Apple Watch special that's going to be going up tomorrow evening, Monday. That'll be, it won't be a numbered episode. It'll be a text message special. I haven't decided exactly how we're going to format that, but do look out for that. Ian and I will be back almost certainly next weekend. Until then, my friend, it has been nothing less than a pleasure.
Agreed. Au revoir.